AI Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution Radio!
Alright, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Biden is evil. Trump must win. He's real. He will bring back the people's trust. These leftists are not for the American people. It's the biggest cover-up ever. Biden is an extension of the policies of Obama that weakened America, and we cannot let that happen again. The left are deceitful and have lied to the American people. They have stripped down her mighty powers for their own ego of power to rule the nation's economy. Let us ask God to rid this horror, and let us hold a candle on this land of the free and bring her back to the place she once stood proud. She is God's liberty. She is God's love. She is freedom, dignity. And God will cast his healing breath across this land. He will vanquish deceit. And I assure you that Jesus, Moses, will stand their ground and ask all to vote for truths. Our land of the free will break her chains, and this will be. My children of God, your only hope is to see this greatness. And you must vote for this man in office, the President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump, for he is a man of integrity fighting for you and this country's welfare. He loves this country as you do. Don't allow deceit to manipulate you. For only truths will prevail. Don't die knowing you all allowed a lie. This lie has to be wiped out. Donald Trump has been great for the American people these last 4 years, and he wants to continue to fight for her glory and freedom. The left will bring you down with their lies and destroy America. Let us all pray, and may God give us strength that we may shine in the name of Jesus and Moses and saints of all religions. May we hold God's torch of truths and pray for world peace. For the U.S. to bring our nation's flag to wave with pride with President Donald Trump, 2020. God bless.
Good morning, folks. That was John Voight. Some strong words, I must say. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. Glad you could join us this morning or today, depending where you are. I know it's already afternoon for my two guests. Only one of them. I think Mike is in the East Coast, and I think Dave is Central Time, like I am. Excuse me.
Well, I used to be, but we don't change time here, so now I'm on Eastern Time.
Oh, so you are on the East Coast, yeah. So it is the afternoon. Okay, well, yeah. Thanks for clearing that up for me. I get confused early in the day. And I've been confused a long time because it's almost afternoon. Anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. Today is November 13th, and what a week it's been. Hi, Mike. You can say hello if you'd like.
Hello.
So much enthusiasm, I tell you. But I can't blame you. So anyway, what'd you think of John Voight's words? I agree with a lot of them, but not all of it, maybe. I don't know. I don't think we've seen honesty for a long time in America.
Were you referring to me?
Yeah, I suppose so.
All right. Well, I think that what we're doing is we're following down that same crooked path of believing what's best for America is what your political party offers.
Ah.
And just because what's passing for the right now might be better than the left, and it obviously is, that doesn't mean that we're anywhere near individual liberty and rightful liberty for the people of this country. If we put it all right back where it was 1 year ago, we're still right in the middle of a mess. We've got an economic mess. We've got an approaching this pandemic. And, you know, people, you know, you can love Trump all you want to. If this pandemic is a fraud, it's on him. Most people don't want to consider that. But if it's a fraud, it's on him. The buck stops here. If Fauci and Gates are pulling a scheme on America, then he is responsible for letting it happen. I know you don't want to hear that. Everybody's all up, amped. We got to get rid of the crazy left, you know, because they're Marxists, they've lost their minds, and that's true. But just because we go up the stairs two steps doesn't put us where we're supposed to be. Just a view from my saddle.
I might agree with that more than what John Boyd had to say. But Dave, what do you think?
Well, Mike is sort of responsible for planting a certain seed in my mind about government being the problem. And unfortunately or otherwise, that seed has been growing. And I really see that as the root of the problem. We have a government that has so overstepped its bounds in every respect, with or without Trump. Obviously, Joe Biden's going to destroy what's left of the country very rapidly. But the problem is this government has metastasized like a cancer, and the end result is going to be it's going to control every aspect of our lives as we move forward.
Yes, I agree with that too. I don't know what to think about all this. It's ridiculous. There's Republicans that are against what's going on with Trump in regards to trying to stop this obvious takeover via elections. And what I've noticed is that people accept the media determining who is president because they say so. And I don't know how many of you watched it on election night and a day or two after, but it's obvious that the voting was rigged. I mean, the electronic parts of it and a lot of other things. And it's just a travesty what's happened. People seem to accept it. And like a lot of people have said, I don't see where the media claims where, you know, they get to determine who's president in the constitutional body. Which brings me to something that Mike mentioned, the left, I think he was talking about. I don't see that in the Constitution either. What's with the two parties? I kind of get it, but Mike, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the original two parties occurred in the early 1790s is because the Federalists, who would be the Republicans of today, had tremendously overstepped their boundaries, and their creation, the Supreme Court, had gone along with them in what they were doing. And so the people who had been the anti-Federalists then began to see that, hey, something's got to be done with this. And so the seesaw battle began. And so Jefferson is elected president in 1800 after the election, goes to the House of Representatives 36 times. So he is finally elected. Each state gets a vote like it would be today if it goes to the House of Representatives again. So each state got a vote. So finally, Jefferson prevails. There were some political deals that were done that did that, because for 35 straight times, he and Aaron Burr tied every time. So we end up with Jefferson there, and Jefferson's creation his first term in office may have been the best 4 years this country has ever witnessed, because he reduced the size of the federal government. He got rid of a lot of bureaucrats. He lowered taxes. There were no taxes on individuals whatsoever. The government still was doing perking along fine for 4 years. But even then, in his second tour, and that's why I do not believe that any president should be able to succeed themselves, because it began, as Lord Acton says, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And then Jefferson did some things that were totally unconstitutional in his second tour. So, and even Jefferson himself had said that rotation, or what we would call term limits today, that rotation in office would always bring forth the genius of the community. Well, we don't have the genius of community in politics today. What we have is the wealthy and the well-born telling everybody else what they can and cannot do. And so the party system is always going to be there, but it was created when one side oversteps their boundaries, the other side says, no, you can't do this. And then you have a battle that goes back and forth. And as what has happened in my lifetime is the battle between right and left has gone on and on and on and on, and liberty and individual rights have been trashed in the process.
Well, I hope that agree answers with that. Your question. Yeah, that's a lot of it. It seems like, as you inferred, that people are just thinking off emotions. And, of course, the elite are controlling what people should think. You know, they're totally clipping people's opinions on Twitter and Facebook. It's total control. And these oligarchs that run those type of platforms are just totally controlling what can be heard and what not can be heard. And as I've witnessed, it doesn't matter what the Constitution says. It's all, I don't know, it's ridiculous. And I have to agree that Trump is, trying to do something about what was stolen. And people are just acting off emotions, but that's what democracy, I suppose, is all about, and what they tried to, do away with any emotions in the Constitution. Yes.
Let me ask a question real quick. You said that Trump is trying to do or trying to put stuff back. Can you give me an example of that?
Well, he's trying to put it back into aspects of the constitutional law, which has totally been
But where's the example? I've heard people say that for 3 years now. Where is the example that Trump has tried to return anyone to constitutional governance?
Well, the specific in this case is just the challenging what was stolen, using the constitutional provisions to do so.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess I'm dumb. I still don't see the example.
I don't know. He could just let it go and let the media control this. He's using the Constitution to fight what they've done.
I'm still lost. I keep hearing people say that Trump is doing this stuff, but I see no examples. What do you mean he could let the media just keep going? They are doing it. What do you mean he could let them do it? They are doing it right now. What's he done to stop them?
He's taking it to court. Better than nothing.
Oh, wonderful. We let the leftist go to a leftist court. We take a problem to the leftist court to find out if we can do what God said we could do. I just love this paradigm.
What's God have to do with the Constitution?
I'm talking about individual rights, and the individual rights have everything to do, go right back to our first organic document. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable, rights.
Right.
Okay. Correct. And where has Trump done anything to secure those unalienable rights? Give me an example. I would love to embrace the guy and say, hey, he's great. But all I hear is rhetoric. I don't hear anybody showing me where he's actually done anything. He's brought members of the deep state into his own cabinet repeatedly. And then when they mess up, he won't get rid of them. Pompeo is probably one of the deepest deep state people in the world, and he's got him sitting as Secretary of State. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to put him down. I just want somebody to point out the example of where he is actually. I've heard for 3 years, well, Trump is trying. Trying what? What about an executive order banning abortion? What about an executive order saying, okay, and I know executive orders aren't constitutional, but everybody else does them. So if he's trying, let's see an executive order that does some of this stuff.
Yeah, you're broad brushing what I was getting at. He's not letting the media get away with, or the leftists get away with, stealing the election, and he's using the Constitution to repair that, or at least challenge it. Well, that was my point. Yeah, you're right. He has not brought us back to constitutional government or what it should be, as Jefferson, mentioned, did.
What he is challenging is nothing for the people. What he is challenging is something for the Republican Party. Where is his court challenges for violations of the Constitution? Where is his, when the Congress came up with something, where is his veto? How many bills has he vetoed since he's been in office? What I'm looking for is a track record. And I know people, and if I had to choose between the two, I wouldn't. But what I want to know is, I've heard this rhetoric and we play into it because as a people, we keep repeating what we hear other people say. You know, it's like someone asked me the other morning, they said, okay, well, what do you think about this? I said, I don't know. I haven't watched television. So we keep repeating what other people are saying. Trump is trying. Trump is trying. I've heard that over and over and over now for 4 years. Trying what? Where is the effort where is the actual thing that he has done? Where is the executive order? Where is the veto of legislation? When has he taken to the bully pulpit and challenged things that are already unconstitutional? That's what I want to see. That is the actions of a leader, not someone who's just going along to get along. And what he is doing right now is he's challenging his own, what is happening to him and what's happening to him personally. I don't see that that's challenging it for the United States, and I don't see where it's challenging it for the Constitution. Just me.
Okay. Well, dare to think out loud, right? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I agree with what Mike's saying. And, you know, another way to look at it, too, is, you know, whatever you think about Trump, whether he's, you know, he's trying or he's not trying, you know, it's clear that the entire political establishment and the media industrial complex is pretty much, you know, against anything the guy does. And so we're in a situation now where I don't even think the president has as much power as we're led to believe anymore. Of course, Mike is right about the executive orders. But I just think that we're in a situation now where the president is pretty much just a salesman and a figurehead. And I've never heard anyone explain to me why Trump surrounded himself with so many awful people like John Brennan, Pompeo, that big fat governor from New Jersey that's turning on him now. You know, he surrounded himself with CFR members and globalists and awful people. I've never heard a good explanation as to why he did that. And I would just like to add one other thing. You know, you talked about the election being called by the media. It's very important to note that the media source that was the first one to say Joe Biden won was the AP, the Associated Press, which is owned by the Rothschilds. The Associated Press is owned by the Rothschilds. So as soon as the great master spoke, all the other media people jumped on board, and that's where we are right now. And I agree with Mike said, too, that Trump is trying to help himself right now because this election was screwy as we've ever seen in our lives. And I think we're at a situation now where we'll never see anything resembling a real election ever again.
I guess that's my point. If this isn't won by constitutional means, by in or some way, shape, or form, that'll be the fact of the matter. So, you know, I've heard things such as, we don't even need a constitution or anything written down. Let's just let this fly. And, you know, that's the totalitarian dictatorships they want to put in place. So if you don't, you know, it's nice to do things by handshake. Through my life, that's pretty much how I've worked. But unfortunately, you have to put things down in writing or you're going to get screwed over. And I look at the things in writing should be revered. And I know that the Constitution's loosely written and it can be screwed with quite readily, and it has been. But I guess I see a big, vast difference between what's written down and what these people are trying to do per, you know, proxy of being elite or in control of things, which is just wrong. And as far as Trump goes, well, I guess we'll never know if he actually did beat Hillary Clinton, or was that rigged too to, you know, be the case or the fact of the matter as we see it. So anyway, a lot going on with that. Anything else, Mike, you want to add two-party thing?
You know, if we had real life, real stuff going, and it's been talked about now for going on 45 years plus, what would happen if we want to see some real movement in this country? What would happen if Trump would have been, shortly after his inauguration, what if he would have issued an executive order banning abortions? Of course, we would have seen a hailstorm of activity, but the subject would have been discussed outside of the parameters of the Supreme Court. And that's a subject that has affected how many people? Why not bring it up? Why not be controversial? They will not do that. Trump hasn't done it. Other people hasn't done it. And Trump said when he was campaigning in 2016 in Detroit, he said, "I am proud to be a member of the party of Lincoln, and I intend to bring back the government of Abraham Lincoln." But everybody glosses over that, and they said, "Oh, well, he just said that to get elected." Okay, so you accept a politician lying to get elected. If you accept a politician lying to get elected, you elect a politician lying to as far as your rights are concerned as well. And that's what to me is wrong here. We have turned into a polarized society of emotional, idiots who participate in emotional masturbation to decide who is going to be the leader of a country that has been so unconstitutional during my lifetime. It's incredible. It's like, okay, let's have a big election and choose who gets to drive that car that's been sitting in the junkyard for 30 years. This thing has gone beyond, to me, beyond reality.
That's an interesting picture, driving a car that's been in a junkyard, which I can agree with, no doubt. Back to the Party of Lincoln thing. I think they killed him because he was against the 14th Amendment. So what's he exactly talking about, the Party of Lincoln? I think he was forced into getting rid of slavery, but then he rejected the 14th Amendment, so they killed him and put their puppets in. Even I think it was Jefferson Davis, wasn't it, that rejected the 14th Amendment too, but they forced it through anyway.
Wait a minute. Lincoln was forced to get rid of slavery? When did he do that? Because he didn't get rid of any slavery. When he was dead, we still had slavery. In his last year in office, he brought in West Virginia as a slave state a year after the Emancipation Proclamation. Let's slap this hypocrisy right in the face. That is absolutely ridiculous. Lincoln wasn't forced to do anything about slavery. He didn't pass the 13th Amendment.
I guess he laid the groundwork for it to happen.
Laid the groundwork how? He, as his own Secretary of War stated, with the Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln freed the slaves where he had no control and left those in bondage where he did. How is that working towards slavery, eliminating slavery?
Well, as I think we all know here, that the slavery issue was just a measure or a dog and pony show, if you will, to institute communism in America. That's what I believe. So, yeah, it's I guess the finer details are accepted there, or, you know, that I didn't mention. But for sure, I think they knocked him off because he wouldn't allow them to go further than they wanted to. So I guess we'll never know the exact facts of that. Dave, do you have anything to add before we have break here?
Well, I think the issuing the greenbacks had a lot to do with his assassination, because that was a direct challenge to the absolute power of the central bankers to create money without interest. So they couldn't let something like that start to catch on in the world, because then people would realize how we've been scammed.
Yeah, but Dave, the Congress with the Currency Act of 1862 and 1863 neutered the greenback, and that was 2 years before Lincoln was assassinated.
Oh, explain that further, would you? I'm not aware of that.
Well, you had he came out with the greenbacks, and because he and we probably better jump on this on the other side of the hour, but we can get started. He had issued the greenbacks, and the bankers in England and in Europe went nuts because he and Chase had gone to the bankers and asked them for a loan to finance the war, and they said, sure, you can have all the money you want at 30-40% interest. And so Lincoln says, well, to hell with that. And so he issued the greenbacks, and they're using the greenbacks.
Yes.
Okay, coming back on the other side.
Yeah. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. We'll be back after these station announcements. Stay tuned. We still got an hour and a half to go.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Ravenstar's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's Helby Bork. Have with me today, John Breeson isn't here. Sorry, folks. I wish he could tune in or be with us today and talk about these issues. But I do have Mike Gaddy with me and Dave Scorpio. And anyway, glad you're with us. We still got an hour and a half to go. Before the break, we were talking about greenbacks in the Civil War period and how Trump was going to bring back the Party of Lincoln, whatever that is. I don't know. I can say for sure the insurgency started during that period of time. We haven't been a constitutional government since then. These actors are just frauds, and you know, like I've related in my book and my material, that they've instead of putting a new constitution or system in place after the Civil War, they attach themselves to the Constitution and pretend to be the government that was in place before the Civil War. And Mike, you were talking about greenbacks, of course, but executive orders, too, as far as I can see, those are pretty much dictator measures based on this current system. Executive orders are internal to the workings of the federal government and shouldn't have any play on the states or the people in the states. So I guess I just wanted to bring that up to the people.
Well, if you don't mind, let me continue where I was going before.
Go ahead.
We had Lincoln and Samuel. Anyway, they had his Secretary of the Treasury at the time, Salmon P. Chase. They had gone to the bankers in Europe and wanted to borrow money. They said 30% to 40%. Lincoln says, to hell with that, I'll issue the greenback. So Lincoln issued the greenback, and the bankers, the European bankers, panicked. So they came up with what they called at that time the Hazard Circular. And this was published in England, and I have documented evidence of that. And the Hazard Circular said the following: slavery is likely to be abolished by the war power, and chattel slavery abolished. This I and my European friends are in favor of, for slavery is but the owning of labor and carries with it the care of labor. While the European plan, led on by England, is that capital shall control labor by controlling wages. And then he says, the circular says, the great debt that capitalists will see to it is made out of the Civil War must be used to control the value of money. To accomplish this, the government bonds must be used as a banking basis. And then, now here's the critical part. Now remember, this is written in England. This is not in the U.S. in 1862. Here is what they said. They said, we are now waiting for the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States to make this recommendation. That is so telling, is that the bankers have decided that and they actually did. If you get into the nitty-gritty of this, the bankers in England sent Salmon P. Chase $500,000. And they said, buy enough members of Congress to get that greenback destroyed and to get America operating on the bond system. Well, look at the war. At the beginning of the war, America was in debt. The national debt was $97 million. At the end of 4 years later, the national debt was almost $6 billion. So look at how the bankers prospered over this. Now, it is my belief, and then you had Salmon P. Chase did his job. He bought enough members of Congress, including John Sherman, the brother of William Tecumseh Sherman. They bought enough members of Congress, influential members of Congress, to be able to get these Currency Act of 1862 and the Currency Act of 1863 through Congress, which did away with the greenback. It really didn't destroy the greenback, but the legislation very simply says that the greenback shall exist, but it will not be acceptable in the payment of debts. Now, what damn good is anything as far as money is concerned if you can't pay a debt with it? So that eliminated the greenback, although the greenback was still sitting there, but it was eliminated as a means of currency. So the European bankers used the Civil War to create a massive debt in America, which will then be paid off in gold and silver after, through Reconstruction and what have you. It would be paid off to the bankers in hard money. And I believe the reason that Lincoln was assassinated is Lincoln was terribly worried about countries in Europe, either France or England, coming to the aid of the South. And so Lincoln made a secret deal with Russia, and Russia's ships were guarding New York and San Francisco, among others. And I believe that the bankers saw a deal with Russia in the future as being totally catastrophic to their means of collecting the money that they had loaned to America to conduct the war. And that was both sides. They were loaning both sides money. So then we have, they have a massive debt. And then Lincoln is suddenly making under the table deals with Russia. And that could jeopardize the collection of that huge debt that they had succeeded in accumulating. It's my opinion, and I think I can provide, you know, some evidence, not total evidence, but I can provide evidence to that effect, that that was basically one of the reasons that Lincoln was assassinated, because he had teamed up with Russia.
Wow.
Well, there's your Russian collusion.
Let me ask you two questions. What was in it for Russia in this secret agreement with Lincoln? And secondly, why has it been such a verboten concept for America to align itself with Russia ever since the Civil War that continues on today? What do you think the reason behind that really is?
Well, Dave, the Russians were not on, were not owned and controlled at that time. They hadn't had the Bolshevik Revolution yet. So their economy was not owned by the bankers, and they did not want to see Russia gain that influence in America, which could have happened with the with Lincoln's secret deal. I believe it was Peter II he was dealing with. Don't hold me to that. I could be wrong, but he it was with the one, with the Tsar of Russia at the time. Lincoln had made this deal, and as I said, their ships were guarding the ports to prevent European interference in the war between the states. So there is certainly a reason, possibly, that he was taken out, because the bankers, just like today, when George Bush stood up and talked about the axis of evil, it was ironic that the axis of evil that he named were the three countries that the international bankers didn't control. You think that was just, you know, circumstance? I don't.
Yeah, no, of course not. Of course not. And it's interesting that you pointed out that Russia's economy was not owned by the international bankers at that time. That's very significant. And that's why they wiped out every single member of that family to make sure that the royal family could never return in any way, shape or form.
Well, absolutely.
That ties in with, you know, what you're saying about Russia's economy and what's happened in the United States. The first bank of the United States was European, right? Or of the old world. Correct, Mike?
The first bank of the United States, or the very first bank of the United States?
Very first bank.
The very first bank of the United States was done in 1781 during the midst of the Revolutionary War, and it was done by Richard Morris, Robert Morris, who was in charge of the entire economy for the country. And he made a bank, and it was called the Bank of North America. So it was the very first international bank. Of course, it just about bankrupted the country by 1784, 1785. And for that reason, it was discontinued. And but then, of course, good old Alexander Hamilton brought it back in 1791 and called it the first bank of the United States. The really crazy part about both of those banks is do some research and try to find out who the stockholders were of the Bank of North America under Robert Morris or the First Bank of the United States under Alexander Hamilton. Try to find out who the stockholders are or were. Shouldn't we have known that? Why were they why were they kept secret?
Do you know those Morris connections?
Morris's connections were very well kept secret. Governor Ear Morris, he was no relation to Robert Morris, but he was the assistant to Robert Morris in the conducting the financial affairs of the country during the Revolutionary War. And he made a few trips to France, and one of them is mentioned in a letter between Madison and Jefferson, because Jefferson was still in France. And Madison sent something to Jefferson by Gouverneur Morris, and it's not alluded as to what was in that message that was carried there. But James Madison alludes to the fact that Gouverneur Morris was going to France to conduct some kind of business. And, of course, this is during the Revolutionary War. And the only thing I can think of is that at the beginning of the war, France loaned America a little over $400,000 in gold. And Robert Morris, taking over the First Bank of North America, he took $270,000 out of that $400,000. So he basically embezzled $270,000 to start the Bank of North America. Well, then what he did when he started the Bank of North America is he loaned money to all of his friends and cohorts, and we don't have their names, but I can probably give you some of them. He loaned money to them, and in turn, they took the money that he loaned them, and they bought stock in the Bank of North America. So they were all shareholders in the bank, and they were all privately known. So we know that all of those people, the money that Robert Morris embezzled from France was used to create this bank. And then the unknown shareholders are the ones who, and of course, you know, Robert Morris immediately employed fractional reserve banking, which is traditional of the Bank of England. You can, if you've got a dollar, you can loan 10 or 20. Doesn't make any difference. So fractional reserve banking is what he implemented. And so in effect, it was real crazy during that period of time because Robert Morris was using, he was loaning money to the federal government to buy war goods. And those war goods were bought from a company called Willing and Morris, which Robert Morris was part owner of. Anyone see the trade here that's going on where people are becoming independently wealthy on a war? And has that ever happened again in history?
Hmm.
Yeah.
I can't think of a time.
So that was what was happening. And I think, and you find these things when you go through these official documents and that letter to Madison, to Jefferson. And he says, oh, by the way, I'm sending this message via Gouverneur Morris. And he is on a trip to France. I don't know exactly what the purpose of his trip is. This is during the Revolutionary War. So, and this is after Morris and both of the Morrises have embezzled $270,000 out of $400,000 and started a bank and started loaning the money that was loaned to America by France. The Bank of North America then starts loaning that money again to the U.S. government. So the U.S. government is paying interest on two loans. They're paying interest to France, which they were to pay, and then they're paying interest to Robert Morris and his group on the same money. That's a pretty good scam if you can make it work.
Speaking of the scam, I was going to ask you, in the Constitution, it talks about the states cannot pay anything but gold and silver for tender of their debts. But the United States can borrow money on the credit or the good faith of the United States. Can you speak to that?
Oh, you get into a big story right there. And here's the story on that one is, of course, Robert and Gouverneur Morris, the two thieves, are both at the Constitutional Convention. And Gouverneur Morris plays a huge part in writing the Constitution. Imagine that. So we get Article 6, Clause 1. And if any of you are economists and know anything about a ledger sheet, you will understand this. Article 6, Clause 1 makes all of the debts against the United States valid. But it doesn't mention any of the debts owed to the United States. Now, who owed money to the United States? Robert Morris, Gouverneur Morris, and the stockholders of the First Bank of North America. So they owed money. They owed money to the United States, money they had embezzled and had actually taken out in loans. They owed money to the United States. So when the Constitution was ratified, their debts were cleared. This is a wonderful story if people would only research and find out about it. So Article 6, Clause 1. And so then, and I'm going to get to your states in just a second. So then the other thing that these people did while they're writing the Constitution is said that there can be no ex post facto laws. Well, now that sounds wonderful. And it sounded really wonderful to these people who had embezzled this money, because as the day that the Constitution was ratified with no ex post facto laws, no law could be brought forth that would make them pay the money they owed. And so then they said that the interest, all of the interest on loans paid by the states had to be in gold and silver. And that was purposeful because the stockholders of that First Bank of the United States and the First Bank of, you know, the Bank of North America, those two banks, the stockholders were being paid interest on the money they had loaned to the United States. And so those stockholders wanted their money in gold and silver. And that's why that provision was put into the Constitution.
Yes. I looked at it as a way to use the sovereign states as a collection agents or a way to steal the gold and silver and create a fiat money system. Because if the bankers tried to alone, you know, get gold and silver themselves, they really had no tool or mechanism to do it with. So they used it to, you know, collect, put the people of the states in debt or the states in debt and collect all the gold and silver.
By 1811, at the end of the 20-year commission of the First Bank of the United States, 1791 to 1811, at the end of that 20-year period, when they didn't renew the bank, most all of the gold and silver in the continental United States was in the hands of these bankers because the states had been required to pay in gold and silver. Mm-hmm. So the stockholders had most of the actual wealth at the end of the 20-year charter of that bank. So it's well spoken to. But I was just thinking of something. If I remember correctly, we've only got Dave for this first hour. Let's get Dave in here to talk for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Well, yeah, no, I'm just actually listening to this conversation. It's very interesting. So I'll jump in, but continue. This is fascinating to me.
Well, we know that the Federal Reserve took effect in, 1913? The 16th
yes.
Amendment?
Yes.
And they've, you know, they got their stronghold in 1913. You mentioned that the greenbacks were not liked or didn't do what they were supposed to do during the Civil War. So it took them a while to get full control. And then, of course, during the so-called Great Depression, they basically took all gold away from the American people, right? Can you speak to that, Mike?
Yes, that's correct. You know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the private ownership of gold against the law, and that was done especially. But I'd like to jump back to that what you talked about with the creation of the Federal Reserve, 1913. How long did it take from 1913 for the United States to be involved in a world war? 4 years.
Yeah.
And no, see, only a year. Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
World War One. So look at how that operates. And the story is, and it's documented in the National Archives for people who would like to verify this, the bankers went to Woodrow Wilson, and Woodrow Wilson had campaigned on keeping us out of the war in Europe. And we know how these campaign promises go. So he had promised to keep out. So the bankers go to Woodrow Wilson and said, look, America has loaned England a lot of money to fight this war. We've given them a lot of resources and a lot of money. If Germany wins this war, Mr. President, you'll never get your money back. The only way you can ensure that you get your money back from this war is to enter the war on the side of England. Shortly thereafter, what happens? These bankers love war. If you don't, if you would like a real good example, read the two-time Medal of Honor recipient, Smedley Darlington Butler, read his pamphlet or his book called War is a Racket, and you will see exactly how that these banks love wars. That's why we've been in one for 19 years straight now. The bankers love wars because they make 200 to 300% on their investment instead of the normal interest rate.
Right, and they get to redraw national boundaries, destroy cultures and reshape them. It's really the greatest transformational tool on top of the profit motive as well.
During that same time period back in the 17 and 19, people had to wear masks in America too back then for 3 years. Just like they are today. I wonder if they're just doing the same thing. Same game plan. And about 1828, America went into the Great Depression with the bankruptcy.
Well, I don't think it was 3 years. It was only about a year. And I don't think that they enforced, I've never heard before this time that they enforced any kind of mask mandate. I don't think they would have been able to. And I'm very dubious about the death toll that they claim. That Spanish flu, they said it was 50 million people died worldwide. I simply don't believe that. But they're already saying that they're letting out little breadcrumbs to people that this masking thing might become permanent.
Yes, I've seen that myself. Didn't mean to commandeer the history lesson, but I find it odd that the same tactics are being used today. And we know there's a world reset coming on. And like I said, by 1928, they went into full bankruptcy. So I don't know. I see parallels there.
Well, guys, stop and think about it. You talk about the strategy working. Look at what happened with the great Vince Lombardi in Milwaukee. Or within Green Bay with the Green Bay Packers, he developed what was called the power sweep with Taylor and Horning. And he dominated the NFL for how many years? And his adage was, I'm going to keep running it till you stop it. So the bankers are going to keep running this scam until the people stop it.
Yep. And do you think, Mike, that these bankers, deals go to the Rothschilds? It goes back to what, 1600 or so?
Well, the first, the founder of the Bank of England was William Paterson, and he made a very succinct statement when he founded the bank. I think it was 1694, might have been a little later, but it was in that time frame. And William Paterson said when he founded the Bank of London, or the Bank of England, I'm sorry, he said, the great thing about this is we will make interest, we will collect. And that's the Federal Reserve in a nutshell.
Right. All this is tied together under so-called communism. And like that's my forte, what I've been working on for over 20 years now. And I say this is all incorporated into that document based on the economies and how to create, you know, a system of economic control by these same people. And I look at the Communist Manifesto as a blueprint or a device to control the so-called Industrial Revolution. These people that run the world had to come up with some kind of mechanism to control the industry that they promoted. I think we'd still be, you know, very primitive if it wasn't for these people creating the economic, you know, explosion created by the Industrial Revolution. People aren't that motivated, but the bankers are sure motivated to create debt and keep people enslaved, and it all circles around that. Dave, you have to leave in a minute. Got any final closing ideas or thoughts?
Well, I think the thing I'm finding the most disturbing right now is, you know, we're hearing all these phony reports that, oh, there's 150,000 COVID cases every day now, and the virus is exploding. What are we going to do? And, you know, they're dropping the breadcrumbs very, very quickly that one of Groper Joe's first acts in office, if he gets in, will be to have a national mask mandate indoors and outdoors and shut down the economy in the hot spots, which just coincidentally are the states that supported Trump the most. I think we're heading for some rugged times, and Mike Gatti's scenario might play out as well with the it going to the Supreme Court, and then just all chaos is just going to break loose because they've already, you know, Groper Joe is the president elect now, so there's no disputing that according to the mainstream media.
Yeah, the president of Mexico doesn't accept that, and Putin, so far as I know. Anyway, we'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. After these messages from the station.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Thanks, bye. Dave.
All right. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And we'll be right back after this message.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible. You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's Elby Bork. Have with me this hour Mike Gaddy, the one and only. Mike, how's life?
Well, individually, as a person, I got to spend time with my grandkids this morning, and so life is good. But the thing that troubles me is my heart hurts thinking about what they might have to live through during their lifetime.
Exactly, and I think that's why we do this, for the most part. I've got a selfish member of my family that says, to me, he said it just the other day again. Well, we only got about 20 years to put up with this. And I go, you have a daughter, dude. Really? You know? But that's the American way, right? It's all about me.
Well, that's been created through the wonderful public fool system when we started on the program of self-esteem in that system a couple of decades back when students were told that no one can say anything that will hurt your feelings because that's being a bully. So if anyone says anything that hurts your feelings, we have to shut them up. And look what that's manifested into today. We're tearing down historical monuments. We're defacing private property. All because you can't say something to anyone that might hurt their poor little feelings.
Yeah. Look at what's going to happen if Trump gets back in after they, you know, said that Biden won. You know, I guess that's what I was getting at last hour is they're doing things that usually is not of the custom and usage of this criminal government that's been in power for 150 years. And, you know, Trump said about bringing back the party of Lincoln, and we kind of went over that last hour a bit. But who knows what they know or what they're doing or what they're even thinking for the most part. Look at everything as a dog and pony show. Go ahead.
Well, LB, I kind of I misdiagnosed this. I thought what was going to happen was the exact reverse of what we have right now. But I see now how their plan is going to work better. But what I saw happening was Trump winning and the being announced as the winner, and then all of the fraud exposure, vote fraud, coming out to show that Biden had been cheated out of the election. They just switched the program. But I think we're going to have the same result, because if this goes through the court or goes to Congress or anywhere else, and suddenly the Marxists are declared the losers in this election, there is going to be mass chaos in this country. And I still stand by my prediction that at some point in time, they will declare martial law and everything will be shut down. Whether they do it with COVID or do it with martial law is going to make little to no difference. They will do it with one or the other. And so in my opinion, that's what they're going to do. They're going to use it to shut down everything. And I still believe, and I know that the Trumpites get awful upset about this, but I think at some time, if the chaos gets bad enough, that whoever's in charge is going to call in UN troops to quell the disturbance. And that will, preface the complete takeover of the country.
That's a great point. As I have been taught or told over the last 25, 30 years of people really getting into what's going on in the world, especially the United States, that UN troops will eventually be here. But I don't know. I don't know if it can be stopped at this point at all. People seem to be mesmerized by these, well, as you call them, the Trumpites are mesmerized by Trump saving the day. And in sense he is, but I don't know, like I mentioned or noted, how big a dog and pony show this really is. How big is the theater? Did Trump really think he wasn't going to get in, or did he know he was going to get in last election with Hillary? She, in my view, she looked really upset. So I think she really did think she was going to win. But we know it's not up to her. It's up to these banker sorts that determine really who's going to be running things. And it's their navigation that controls the world in regard. I had a question from one of our listeners here. He wanted to know about the Treaty of Love and Friendship in 1787 with Morocco. Oh, do you want to? Wasn't that the Treaty of Peace? Didn't they call it that?
Well, that I am not totally conversant in that treaty, so I would have to say I don't want to speak from ignorance. I am aware of the treaty, but I'm not aware of all of its ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
I am very much aware of the treaty that was negotiated that we call the Treaty of Paris that ended the Revolutionary War. I am very much familiar with that because I think it was very instrumental. If we look back at the three individuals who negotiated that treaty for the United States.
I do remember or understand there's a clause in that or article that says that the United States is not founded on a Christian nation or that's not its existence.
Well, I think the, you know, it depends on what you want to say founded on Christian principles. It depends. Again, we have to look because Unitarians call themselves Christians. The mm-hmm. deists call themselves Christians. You know, the ones we know as Christians today who believe in, you know, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, they call themselves Christians. So you have to, if you want to call this as bounded by a Christian, as a Christian nation, you really got to check out who you're talking about, because in a letter right before his death, Thomas Jefferson, writing to John Adams, said, "I had hoped that I would live long enough to see every man in America a Unitarian." And the Unitarians, mm-hmm. the Unitarians have no belief in, well, they believe the figure of Christ existed, but they do not believe him to be the Son of God. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are you defining as a Christian faith if you're saying a Christian country? That has created a paradox in my mind.
Yes, there's a lot of that that goes on. And it's kind of strange. And to the listener's question, in regard to the founding fathers, they did really try to separate, religion from the government, at least the federal government. In God We Trust, for example, I know we talked about this in past shows, but In God We Trust showed up on the money during the Civil War. And there's things like, I don't know, the Pope donated the cornerstone for the Washington Monument during the Civil War period of 1850s or something to that effect, in that time period, that is. And one of my favorite stories is, a group of guys called the Know-Nothings took the cornerstone and threw it in the Potomac River because they didn't want the church over here in the United States to take over. So this lends to the original, you know, population being more about Jesus or the Christian types instead of this thing they knew the church to be a false religion. So that's what happened during the Civil War, is this false religion took over, and that false religion is still in control today. And, you know, it's the Americans have been duped. And, you know, that's been one of my queries about what you were talking about, the original founding fathers, some were Unitarians and whatever. And now today, it's just based on the false religion of the Vatican. And that fight was going on back in with Guy Fawkes. He was sent over to blow up the British Parliament. And that figurehead has been used recently in the United States as anarchal type person. So anyone that was following Guy Fawkes is actually, in my opinion or my belief, is they were supporting the church and the control mechanism as controlled opposition, because the same thing was going on then or today as it was back during the time of Guy Fawkes was sent in to destroy the British Parliament, which was under, I think, King James at the time. And
remember,
he was more of a...
the 5th of November.
Right, right. All that ties together. So
I have a question.
These same factions are working today, is my point. Go ahead.
I have a question, LB. You and 13 of your closest friends decide that you're going to start a company. And 12 of your 13 friends have taken an oath to the Christian faith, and I'm meaning the triumvirate, the three, the faith, not the Unitarian, not the deist, not the Catholic, not the Jewish, but you've got 12 of your 13 friends, and so you tell your friends that, okay, we're starting this company, but I want to do away with any oath to religion. Whose religion are you getting rid of?
I would say Christ or, Jesus.
Okay, well, then in 1787, 12 of the 13 states had within their constitution an oath to the Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Well, Article 6, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution eliminates that faith, not only in the federal government, but they eliminated it as far as the states were concerned. And people will say, well, some of the states still kept it. Yes, they did. Some of the states kept it. But the thing of it was, is that the states were producing the senators at that time from the state legislators. And so no senator from the time of the first Congress under this new constitution, no senator ever took an oath to the Christian faith. They eliminated it with Article 6, Section 3. So I go back to my question. If 12 of 13 people had an oath to the Christian faith and you tell them you don't want any religion involved in your group, which was the new constitution, who are you getting rid of? You're not getting rid of Jews. You're not getting rid of Catholics. You're not getting rid of anyone else. The faith you're getting rid of is the Christian faith.
Right.
And ironically, in the North Carolina Ratification Convention, one of the delegates, a Henry Abbott, spelled with one T, not two, Henry Abbott made a very prescient statement. He said, if this clause is allowed to stand, eventually this government will be inhabited with infidels, non-believers, and Muslims. Imagine that.
That's what we have today, and the actual war is against true Christians.
Imagine someone in 1788 seeing that. If we get rid of an oath to the Christian faith, and because they got rid of that oath, I don't see how anyone can say that this country was founded from that constitution on Christianity. Because they got rid of the Christian faith, and nowhere inside that Constitution is, like in the other documents, nowhere in that Constitution is the mention of the Creator, the ruler of the universe, or anyone else. The Constitution basically changed the covenant from an oath to the Creator to an oath to we the people.
That's obvious in my eyes. So I guess it gets down to there are a lot of deceived people out there. And I played that John Voight clip up front last hour. And this ties into that. And he's on the right path with a lot of things, but it's hard to tell where these people are coming from. As you can tell, if John was here today, he would talk about, I keep mixing the acronym up. There's a group of people right now that Mitt Romney and several other people are part of, or it's a main control mechanism for the United States right now. And
Council on Public Policy.
Thank you. My Alzheimer's is kicking in. Anyway, they're in control of things, and they're Judeo-Christian, and that's an oxymoron in my estimation. And it ties into the confusion of, you know, what's truly going on, as you just laid out. I believe the synagogue of Satan is in control, and that ties right into that system. You know, all the religions mixed together and whatever, and they're using the Muslims to control America. They were used in 9/11, about 20 years ago now, to be the boogeyman currently. Or, you know, they haven't been talked about recently or much recently. The people that have crept into Congress recently, the last 4 years, have been part and parcel to that problem. But then you have Cortez, who is vowed to be a Marxist type, and you got the Muslims, and it's just a mess. And it ties back to what you said, happened in 1787. There's a idiom for that, or a saying. Chickens have come home to roost. I think that might be fitting.
Yeah, most definitely. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. Yeah.
It seems like they kept other religions out of it for a long time. I know the 48ers brought a bunch of Catholics and Jewish people over, and that's when they did the infiltration of Marxism. Was during the 1850s. It started then. And that's when the 1848ers came over and started polluting everything as far as, doing away with the true Christian identities that used to or that were involved in founding the United States or the colonies and, prior to that. That's the fight we're really dealing with right now, is true Christianity or the true Christians against this mishmash that they assembled definitely back in 1787.
Well, Go ahead. What I was going to do was I was going to read one. I've got them all, but I was just going to read one. I don't want to take the time to read them all. But as I said, 12 of the 13 had an oath in their state constitutions. Let me read Delaware's, which is pretty close to the rest of them. But let me read it so that people will understand what the oath was before the Constitution eliminated these oaths. This was in Delaware, and I quote, and it's under Article 22 of the Delaware Constitution of 17 during that time frame. And it says, every person who shall be chosen a member of either house or appointed to any office or place of trust before taking his seat or entering upon the execution of his office shall take the following oath or affirmation if conscientiously scrupulous of taking an oath, to wit. In other words, they can take an oath of affirmation if they don't want to take the oath. But here's what they have to swear to. I, blank, will bear a true allegiance to the Delaware State, submit to its constitution and laws, and do no act wittingly whereby the freedom thereof may be prejudiced, and also make and subscribe the following declaration to wit. I, blank, do profess faith in God the Father, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, and in the Holy Ghost, one God, blessed forevermore, and I do acknowledge the Holy Scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration, and all officers shall also take an oath of that particular office. Now, 12 of the 13 states had an oath like that. The Constitution eliminated it. So how can you say that this is a Christian nation? They eliminated an oath to Christianity.
Mm-hmm. That's where most people don't understand what's really going on. And like I said, the Vatican basically took over during the Civil War, and they got it back, you know. So who to trust, I guess, is the question, you know.
Well, I think the best thing is to trust no one.
That's pretty much where I'm at, based on ignorance or subversion, you know. These people that are in Congress right now, I don't even know if it's split down the middle. You know, there might be one or two people that are true to God, but all the rest of it's, you know, lip service, or they don't even know what they're talking about because everything's been subverted. I keep telling people, you were born in a box. You don't know constitutional government. You've been living this nightmare for 150 years minimum. And then plus, you know, you just noted one thing about the original Constitution that changed things. So, you know, for the full birth of the country has been under this system, which is perverted.
Well, LB, one of the things I think this is critical, of all of the people at the Constitutional Convention to bring up prayer was Benjamin Franklin. Mm-hmm. And they were in the middle of a huge fight about representation in the Congress. And some states wanted it to be totally popular vote. Others said no, because if they did, all three states would control all 13 states. And now it's, you know, similar. If we had a popular election, five states would control the other 45, basically by numbers, sheer numbers. But anyway, I think this is very ironic, and this comes from the official records. On the 28th of June, 1787, Franklin noted the daily prayers that had been held in the first Constitutional Convention and commented on the lack of same in the present venue. And this direct quote can be found in The Real Benjamin Franklin on page 40 and 41, 258 and 259. This is mentioned twice in his biography. And here was what he said in the beginning, what he said to the convention, and I quote, in the beginning of the contest with Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayers in this room for the divine protection. The longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth that God governs in the affairs of men. We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. Now, that's from Benjamin Franklin at the Constitutional Convention. So then what happens? Alexander Hamilton protested and said that calling in the clergy would lead to fears in the public, that they were embarrassments and dissension within the convention itself. And then it was reported that Hamilton opposed prayer at the convention because he could not support an intervention into the constitutional proceedings by a foreign power or aid. Imagine that now, if you will. And so Franklin then stated in his biography again that out of the 55 people at the convention at that time, only two or three thought prayers were necessary. Now, when in the world have you ever been able to assemble 55 Christians and only three of them think prayers were necessary? Again, that shoots holes in the entire theory. And here's one other thing, and then I'll shut up for a while. One of the most striking features of the United States Constitution of 1787 is the absence of an explicit acknowledgement of the deity or the Christian religion. The invocation of a deity to authenticate or attest to divine sanction for public acts or decrees is a tradition that predates the Christian era and is found in non-Western as well as Western culture. In this respect, the Constitution departed from the pattern of most public documents of that day. The Declaration of the Causes and Necessity of Taking Up Arms, 1775, the Declaration of Independence, 1776, the Declaration of Articles of Confederation, 1781, virtually all state constitutions, 12 out of 13, and other official documents are replete with claims of Christian devotion and supplication for a supreme being. However, the federal constitution makes no such religious affirmation or declaration, even of the perfunctory kind that was typical of other documents written by the framers. This omission is remarkable since, despite any revolutionary ardor of the time, there was little sentiment that the new Republican order broke with the prevailing Christian traditions of the American people.
Hmm.
So a Christian nation, where does that come from? That's got to be myth.
Well, the state's been in control. And with that, we almost are at break here. But I just noticed in the news this week that in China, they're burning down ancient worship, buildings and things where they worship their religion, which everyone knows that they're communist. And Karl Marx said they were to, eliminate all religion under communism. So I guess they're putting the final foot down in China, and eventually will come here, because world communism is their goal. Anyway, this is Dare to Think Out Loud. Station break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
the future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is the last segment of Dare to Think Out Loud for November 13th. Unfortunately, it's Friday the 13th. Anyway, hope you're all doing well. This is broadcast on Revolution Radio, this program. So, if you could help us out, we'd appreciate it. It's listener-supported. Go to the website at freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Find the donation button. Hit that and check out the instructions and donate a few bucks. We'd really appreciate it. And also, there's the Patreon orange button that you can help out with, or send in by snail mail a donation. That would be great. That's at the bottom of the page, the address to do that. As far as I know, snail mail still is in operation. So the oligarchs in Silicon Valley haven't taken over everything yet. But they're doing a good job at it, I'll tell you that. That's basically, I think, what one of the narratives is on the internet or in the political world, that the oligarchs are controlling everything and they're tied to the Democrats, and President Trump is, you know, fighting against these people. Anyway, that's one of the narratives, and it's not fully everything that's going on, but they want people to think that. I think they're throwing the Democrats under the bus in some way, shape, or form, but we'll see what happens with that. We know the original Republican Party is part of the Radical Republicans, and I call them the original Communist Party. It was installed by rich industrialists, and basically, they use the Communist Manifesto to lay out the blueprint over the last 150 years of what's transpired. And I believe the coin is communism, and there's two sides to the coin in America, socialism and capitalism. And they work together if they're, you know, done properly, but it's been used as a theft vehicle the last 150 years. I have noted or said before that imagine if these bankers and the people that we talked about before part of the show didn't have control as they do. Think how rich Americans would be. We'd be sitting pretty, but they filtered off all our labors through the Communist Manifesto via income tax and other measures to industrialize the rest of the world. You know, third world countries and things of that nature. And it's not to improve their lives per se, but to make profits off them. That's the bottom line. It's all about profits. And of course, Marx's ruling class are the ones that are making the profits, like Pelosi, for example, and whoever's in Congress have made a ton of money. We know about Biden and his criminal enterprise through his son. And that's who is in control. And, you know, a lot of people hate Trump, but I don't know why, for the most part, because they're told to, for the most part. And it's my estimation that they're trying to get rid of, well, you know, the Communist Manifesto is a debt, not a debt, but a profit consolidation method that they put together to eventually put all the profits in hands, the hands of the synagogue of Satan. And that is the end game. So they're getting rid of the rich people in America and the people that are profited off this system the last 150 years, the useful idiots. And now they're in an end game. And, you know, that's the unfortunate part I think Trump's involved in. He's part of the end game and getting rid of some of these wealthy American useful idiots. And, of course, Biden's still in there. So the fight is confusing at this point. But if people don't put an end to it and wake up to what's going on, it's going to continue. Anyway, Mike, what do you want to talk about the next 20 minutes?
Mm.
Did I lose you? There you are.
Nah, I don't know. I probably talked enough.
Yeah, well, you know so much, you know. People criticize me because I speculate a lot. Not really. A lot of my work is founded in documents, like John Breeson, for example. He's got that program, We've Read the Documents. And that told me right up front that this guy knows what he's doing because he looks at the history and what's written. And when I got into this 25 years ago, one of the rules that I was taught by mentors was use their law or their what they've said against them. So that's my, you know, ground rule.
Well, you know, we've got so many things, you know, when I look at this and I realize that, you know, the country's polarized, and it was done so by the media for a purpose to polarize people. You get people angry, you get people emotional, and the brain disengages and nobody thinks. So here is the thing I would like for, and I know the cultural Marxists on the left are pure evil. People, I am not defending them. I would never defend them. They are just evil. I just want to know someone who is a huge Trump supporter. We know that all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are embraced by our current government.
Right.
There is an agency in place to promote all 10 planks, sometimes multiple agencies for any particular plank. So yep. If we have communists, and he said, you know, we'll never be a socialist country. He had to be smoking something that day. But we have an agency in place. In the 4 years that he has been sitting in office, what has Trump done to try to eliminate the Marxist domination of those and the implementation of those 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto?
Nothing.
Well, then what has he done?
Well, now that you say that, and my book goes into this, and what it's based on what they've said, the people that control the world, that their goal is world communism, okay? So anything, if he's done anything that I've noticed, that he's taken us away from what they call globalism, which is in fact, you know, the world communist blueprint that they're using. So if anything, he's done that a bit by, you know, doing away with some of the trade deals and things that were really screwing over Americans.
Oh, can you tell me the date that he signed an executive order removing us from the United Nations, please?
Well, I said he's made some adjustments. I didn't say he totally got us out of it. What you're talking about is isolationism or be an isolationist?
Not necessarily. I just don't think we have to be a member of the United Nations.
Well, I agree with that.
Jefferson outlined it perfectly. He said, you know, we have free trade with everyone. If we have free trade with everyone, there's no need for a war. But if there's no wars, then the bankers don't make a jillion dollars. So the United Nations has done nothing to promote this country, absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, the United Nations has done more to bring us down than anyone else.
Yeah, so, well, that was its goal, you know.
So why not an executive order appease this guy who's trying to drain the swamp and make America great again? Why not get rid of the United Nations?
Maybe that's his second term.
Yeah, well, you know, I heard that if he is elected, that QAnon's going to be Secretary of Defense.
Oh, okay. Not that I followed Q or anything like that, but don't you think some of that's kind of coming to fruition? Or it's being seen a bit, a little bit?
Yeah, I noticed just last week all of these sealed indictments that were talked about 3 years ago. I noticed all of those Democrats are now in prison.
Yeah. So you don't expect any indictments to come down on these people that are...
Absolutely not. If there was anything valid about this government, the Clintons would have been serving 30 to 40 years in prison 20 years ago.
Maybe the second term.
Why wait? Didn't he campaign on Hillary to jail? Wasn't that one of his campaign slogans?
Like I said, maybe it's the second term in office.
Oh yeah. Well, then when he get them 4 years from now, you're going to be telling me that, well, if we could just elect Donald Trump again, he would fix this mess. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Barr did break protocol on the election debacle that's going on right now. Go ahead, talk while I get rid of this.
Well, I'm not sure what to say, but I will make an attempt. I don't mean to be negative towards Trump. I just mean to be reality. Embrace reality. Why do we have this? If he's been there for 4 years, where are the positive things he's done to take us away from cultural Marxism? Why hasn't it happened? Why hasn't there been an order taking us out of the United Nations? Why hasn't there been executive orders getting rid of abortion? Well, you're going to say, well, he couldn't do that. Well, George Bush wrote an executive order which said no one could sue an oil company. So if you can write an executive order just before you invade Iraq and say no one can sue an oil company, if you can write that in an executive order, why can't you say, well, we're going to get rid of abortion? Why not? I'm lost as to where the positives are. Just being a positive that you kept a Democrat from doing something is not a positive for our country, taking us back to freedom. It may be a positive in, counterbalancing something they're doing, but someone please show me in the last 4 years where cultural Marxism has been reduced. I think it's grown. So,
well, yeah, they sure let them get away with it. I mean, well, isn't it odd that all the Democratic governed entities or municipalities, be the state or a city, are governed by Democrats? And it seems like they're letting them burn down cities or personal businesses, if anything. And we know Trump could do something about it, but he didn't. So I don't know.
Wait. Trump could do something about it. Tell me where that is in the Constitution.
Well, it's the 14th Amendment, if anything.
Tell me where it's in the Constitution. 14th Amendment wasn't properly ratified. Tell me where in the Constitution Trump could do something about what's happening in Portland or Chicago or Pittsburgh or Milwaukee. Where is this king granted authority in the Constitution to do something about something that's happening in a state?
They have to the governor has to let him come in.
Oh, Article 4. A governor, if the legislature is not sitting, or the legislature itself must ask for help for an insurrection or violence within a country. Within a state.
Well, so, it is a country.
Well, that is true. Several of the people, including Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, referred to Virginia as their country. So I understand.
Tuss Bovee's Law Dictionary.
That is true, and I understand that. But how could Trump do something without someone asking for help?
Well, the 14th Amendment, I think, pierces that, but they don't like to let that cat out of the bag. Is what's going on with the elections right now. This is no longer separate bodies politic. They're all basically the states are political subdivisions of the 14th Amendment now.
Okay,
they're elected by federal
LB.
Citizens.
Another question.
Mm-hmm.
Trump was inaugurated January of 2017, right?
Yes.
Okay, do we have more or less Marxism since that date?
Oh, there's a lot more. These riots are part of it. They admit it, the people behind it.
Okay, and here is, we have a group called BLM, Black
yes.
Lives Matter, that was formed after the Trayvon Martin situation and George Zimmerman. After that happened, BLM was formed and created by three self-avowed Marxists.
Yes.
Okay, what has Trump done to deal with that rampant Marxism?
Yeah, he could declare them under executive order to be terrorists.
Ah, and they're burning down buildings and stuff, and he could declare Black Lives Matter to be a terrorist organization. But he's not about to do that. Why?
I think he did, didn't he?
Nope.
It was talked about, I thought. But
Sure. You know, there are people who talk about a lot of things. I once talked about being a billionaire.
I heard something about it. I haven't looked at it in depth. Well, it's back to what I said about the Republican Party being the original Communist Party and insurgents, admit their insurgents under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It's planned opposition. Plain and simple.
Well, you know, when is the last time you heard anyone in the news media talk about constitutionality and how Joe Biden is more and supports... show his 47-year voting record of how he has supported the Constitution. Why haven't we seen that?
Well, that guy's a right-out criminal. And it's sad that he even is where he's at. But it stands to reason. Like I said on my program, and I've said it before, you know, after they got rid of Jefferson Davis, they put Grant in. For two terms, he was supported by the radical Republicans. And his two terms in office are grounded in graft and corruption. That's history. That's a fact.
Wait a minute. They got rid of Jefferson Davis. When Jefferson Davis was Secretary of War at one time. I do not believe he was ever president, though. Was he?
Who took over for Lincoln? Maybe I misspoke.
Andrew Johnson.
Andrew Johnson. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was thinking of
a
different character. So anyway, my point is that Grant's two terms in office were supported by, one, the radical Republicans, and two, it was filled with graft and corruption.
Absolutely.
And there's a law maxim that says when the foundation fails, all fails.
Well,
the foundation...
True.
The foundation of this body politic under the 14th Amendment is based on graft and corruption. So when is that ever going to change?
Well, I don't know, but I got another question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, Jefferson Davis, they held him in prison for 2 years under very terrible conditions, chained to his bed for a portion of that. He had a guard walking back and forth by his bed 24 hours a day. They knew he had a vision problem, so they put very bright lanterns in the room that were on. They never let him see darkness. Basically, he was being tortured. George Bush would have loved that. He was being tortured. But when they decided, let's try him for treason, why didn't they?
They couldn't, because the states, back to what we talked about, if the governor is in opposition to anything's going on by the United States, they have the right to fight it. And they didn't want that out in the public,
well,
or on, as a matter of record, that he committed no treason, or the people of the states either, you know, in this Civil War.
Well, by the time the Civil War was over, the states had no power whatsoever. So, yeah. You know, Lincoln definitely violated the Constitution with the invasion of Virginia.
Yes.
And Maryland, too. He invaded Maryland before Fort Sumter. So for those of you who say that Fort Sumter started the war, choke on your history. But the point of it was, is that Jefferson Davis had people, northern attorneys, wanting to represent him pro bono, and even Horace Greeley was providing money for his trial. And the government refused to try him for treason. Well, you know, initially they wanted to try Robert E. Lee for treason as well. But mm-hmm. they wanted to try Jefferson Davis for treason. But then someone advised them that if they put him on trial for treason, everything accomplished in the war between the states could be turned upside down, because Jefferson Davis did not commit treason, neither
right.
did the South.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually in the Amateur, that the rebels, they so-called during the Civil War, aren't rebels because of that reason.
And they also, definition of treason?
Subversion of the Constitution.
Now, Article 3, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution defines treason, the only crime that is defined in the Constitution. Making war against the states. So who in the war between the states was guilty of making war on the states?
The United States.
Oh, Abraham Lincoln, maybe?
Yeah, that guy, yeah.
Oh, so maybe he violated the Constitution again. Well, you know, when we get down to it, Abraham Lincoln violated the Constitution more than any president in American history. And ironically, a historian by the name of Clinton Rossiter once wrote that Abraham Lincoln had to destroy the Constitution in order to preserve it. Now, I'm not exactly sure how that works, and maybe
how
that's
does
a
that work?
That's a magic formula I'm not aware of, I promise you.
Well, we know Trump is continuing the party of Lincoln, so I guess that says something.
Yeah. Yeah, believe it or not, I once was invited to give a speech at a Lincoln Day dinner for the Republican Party. And the lady who invited me was a very nice lady, and I said, "Ma'am, I've got some articles that I have written that I think you ought to read before you invite me to come speak to a Lincoln Day dinner." And I sent them to her, and she sent back and said, "Thank you. We will not be requiring your presence at our Lincoln Day dinner."
Yeah, the insurgents don't like those things known. They also don't want it known that it's a crime to vote. See, that's how they turned all the, you know, nonsense over onto the people that are consenting right now. Is, you know, it's a crime to vote based on they have to participate in the communist rebellion that the 14th Amendment creates. I call those people maintainers. this lady that you just mentioned. They're maintaining this system, as is the media and judges and whoever else is involved in this. And I suppose that's why I'm not popular, because I brought this to people's attention over 20 years ago, and they've brushed my work under the carpet just to keep the status quo going. Just like the media is in people like Mitt Romney, for example, say, oh, why don't you just concede Trump and let's get on with life here? That's the way we do it, you know, in the district of criminals.
Well, once he concedes, it's over, and he knows it, and that, I believe, still is part of the game plan.
You think he's going to concede, or is he teaching?
No way. No way he's going to concede.
He's not. But that's, going to do isn't it. This a good thing, that he's fighting this and maybe bringing some constitutional education to people?
Wait a minute. How does his fighting anything promote the Constitution?
Well, he's using the Constitution about what they've done to him.
He's using the judicial system, which was set up to protect the government, not the people.
Yeah, but the electoral final, you know, status based is based on the representatives of the states.
Well, that is exactly
true. Or the legislatures, rather.
And very few. There are some states that require the delegates to the Electoral College to vote for the state, how the state voted in the election, but they're not all required to do that.
Right. Well, we'll see how this plays out. We're out of time, Mike.
What'd you do with all the time, LB?
I stole it, like they stole our governments away from us.
Oh, and they stole the election.
Yeah.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks. Have a good weekend, folks. We'll be back next week, God willing. Be safe.
Listening to Revolution.